In the midst of an unfolding international crisis, journalist Deborah Campbell found herself swept up in a mysterious disappearance of Akhlam, her guide and friend. Campbell's frank personal account of a journey through fear and the triumph of friendship and courage is told in the book A Disappearance in Damascus. The story begins in 2007 when Deborah travels undercover to Damascus to report on the exodus of Iraqis into Syria following the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. There she meets Akhlam, a refugee working as a fixer, providing Western media with trustworthy information and context to help get the news out. The book is the story of two women caught up in the shadowy politics behind today's most searing conflict. Again, the name of the book is A Disappearance in Damascus, Friendship and Survival in the Shadow of War. It's a great pleasure to welcome Deborah Campbell to the roundtable this morning. Deborah, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you, Joe.
At what point did you know, since you went over in 2007 to write for Harper's Magazine and you go through the experience that you go through, at what point did you know that you wanted to write this story and write about your experiences and write about this particular woman?
Well, I have a theory that you don't choose your books. Your books choose you mm-hmm. as a writer. And in this case, that's absolutely the case because, as you said, I went to Syria to write a very different story. I was covering this exodus of Iraqis. I wanted to write about the human consequences of war and also to document this, at the time, very little covered humanitarian catastrophe. And it was while doing that reporting over the course of months that I got to know Akhlam, and her story was, first of all, so fascinating to me. I mean, she had really lived the war herself. She had been a fixer in Baghdad as well, fixer being a kind of guide, translator, person, the local person who knows what's going on the ground and also can keep foreign journalists alive. They tend to know the security situation very well as well. And so, and she became a really good friend of mine. I admired her so much, her courage, what she had been through in Baghdad. She had been kidnapped in Baghdad as well by al-Qaeda forces and ransomed and then come to Syria. And she was kind of a real community leader as well. She was running a small school for teenage girls out of her apartment. She was rather like the mayor of the largest community of Iraqi refugees in the world at the time. So it was through what happened to her that this book emerged as a way of telling her story, my story, what we lived through, and also unraveling the story of how the war in Syria stems from the war in Iraq and how these events took place, giving them context, a context that's often missing from our news.
Talk a little bit about the relationship and how it differs from that. I mean, you have had other fixers before, right? So what was it about her and her story, do you think, that allowed the relationship to become personal?
Well, I generally the kind of work that I do is sometimes called immersive journalism, sometimes called slow journalism, rather like the slow food movement. So rather than parachuting in for a few days, I tend to go for months at a time and get as close as I can to the societies I'm writing about. That's where I can see much more closely what is going on the ground and find those human stories that bring far-off events really to life for people and give them that context. So I generally would work through people that I got to know, friends. I was a little bit hesitant about working with fixers, in part because they sometimes have to register with the governments that they work under. And if they do that, then if you're hiring a fixer, you're hiring somebody to watch you and your sources. It's another reason why I work undercover, because I don't want my sources followed. I don't want to be followed. And I know that eventually I'm going to leave, but my sources stay behind and face the consequences when my piece runs. So So generally, I was very wary about fixers. What struck me about Ahlam right away, a number of things. First of all, she was working on her own. She wasn't registered, so this was a very good thing. Also, she was the key fixer. She was working for BBC. She was working for French and Australian television, NPR. She was working for all the human rights groups. She really knew the story from the inside. She was a refugee. She had lived it, and she had seen both sides of it. So she had, in Baghdad, for example, she had worked for a U.S. Civil Military Affairs Center that they had set up in Baghdad that was doing humanitarian work. So she was seeing the American military side. She was seeing the civilian side. She knew more about the war than anyone that I had met. And she had lived it personally. Having been kidnapped like so many Iraqis were, it was really the big growth industry in the country once the government fell and everything went into chaos. And also she was very funny, bold, fearless, the kind of person that could manage in these really chaotic situations. So I had a lot of respect for her as well. And through her, I was seeing a side of the war and essentially what it takes to survive and to remain a human being in these really difficult circumstances that destroy one's humanity.
Yeah, it seems that in the book you become quite inspired by her determination to make something good out of all of the suffering, as all of the suffering is going on around her.
Yes, and she had a very unusual backstory as well. She was the first girl in her village. She grew up in a small village outside Baghdad. She was the first girl to go to high school. Girls there usually did a year or two at most of primary school. And she was not only the first to go to high school, but the first male or female to graduate from university out of her village. Her father was the sheikh of her village, and when she professed interest in continuing her education, he was fully supportive. In fact, he had to face down the men in the village who opposed setting this precedent, and he said to them, "No one knows what the future holds. She goes." And through that education, she was able to be a link between the civilians and whoever happened to be in charge. So after the fall of Saddam Hussein, it was the Americans, and she was able to negotiate that really difficult terrain and bring a lot of help to her people. When she arrived in Damascus after fleeing from Iraq, she was doing the same thing. She set up a kind of infrastructure. She was like the mayor of this community and really a one-woman NGO. And that leadership, that taking of initiative in a very difficult circumstance was very inspiring for me. Also, she was one of the things that inspired me about her was that she was non-sectarian. So this was a time of civil war, as we see civil war in Syria now. And the great fear of the Syrians at the time, too, was that the war would come to them from Iraq. Both countries being exceedingly multicultural, the worst thing you can have is people getting into sort of camps and fighting against one another. And she completely refused those kinds of divisions. She said it's not about religion, it's not about ethnicity, it's about a fight for money and power. And that's how she viewed it, and I believe that's correct.
Deborah Campbell is our guest. The name of the book is A Disappearance in Damascus. So without giving too much away, it is Ahlam's disappearance that you write about in the book as she is arrested. It seems that the first emotion you really deal with is guilt. Is that fair to say?
Yes, yes. Well, what happened was, just in brief, we had been working together for about 9 months, and over that time I knew that she was being watched, that she was being followed. There was a man that was camped outside of her apartment building taking photographs of her as she came and went. Then she started to be pulled into the Syrian intelligence offices for questioning on various occasions. When she was seen, for example, helping the BBC to cover something, they noticed. And because she was so active and people were coming and going from her apartment, often refugees who were asking for help or foreign journalists like myself, And the fact is that I was there on the day that she was arrested. I happened to be at her apartment that morning, and she was arrested in front of me. And as a result, I felt implicated. I couldn't know if it was that my cover had been blown. I couldn't know if I was responsible for putting her in danger. I knew she took many risks. I knew that she was, as a leader, very visible. And as someone who worked with foreign correspondents, she was also on the radar, definitely. So I didn't know what my responsibility was there. But because we were friends and because we'd been working together for such a long time, I felt a moral obligation to stay and look for her.
And that obviously brings tells much of the story in the book and what you go through trying to figure that out and is looking for someone. I mean, how helpless do you, it seems to me, as you so often when you read a book like this, you try to put yourself in the situation. And I just think I would just feel helpless of not knowing even where to go, what to do, especially when the person who is helping guide you so much of the way is now gone.
Exactly. This book has been described as written as a detective novel or written as a thriller. And in a way, that's because that's how it ended up being. And you know the point where the person who is your guide, the person who knows how to get things done, is gone. Suddenly, you're left to your own devices. And at the same time, a lot of things happen when you're in a situation where the person close to you that you depend on is under suspicion, is arrested. Suddenly, this was my experience, a lot of the people that were around you start running for cover. So people don't want to get involved. Trouble is a contagious disease, and if somebody has trouble, the people around them feel it. And so that's one of the things I noticed. And I also began to experience what it feels like to be watched, to be surveyed, that feeling of watching yourself, watching every email you write to think about how someone else might read it, if they're watching, how might they listen to your phone call, how might they interpret your denials when they're asking you if you're a spy, do you sound defensive? All of these things started to come into play in how I felt emotionally responding to this as well.
Very near the end of the book, and again, without giving, because there is such a thriller aspect to it, without giving it away, but you do write the line, I should end the story here, happy ever after, and then there's about 20 more pages in the book. Did you feel, even at that point, that there was a good story here in the sense of a story that had a good, satisfying ending?
Well, I think the story of war never really ends, does
right.
it? War doesn't end, and we're seeing this with the Iraq War and its consequences destabilizing all of the countries in the region. Arguably, the war in Syria wouldn't have occurred, certainly not the way it did. We wouldn't have ISIS, for example, which was, former President Obama said, a direct result of the invasion of Iraq, which gave the world Al-Qaeda in Iraq, which changed its name to the Islamic State of Iraq, and then Iraq and Syria. So these wars morph. And in the lives of those who live through them, it doesn't end either. So for Ahlam, it's a mixed blessing being free because there's so much still that goes on in the lives of those who have lived through that.
Does it have you take pause in taking the next assignment that will bring you to a war zone, or does it sort of re-energize you to want to see and meet other women like her in the future?
I think it gives me a greater understanding of the full scale of the human consequences of war. And having had my own brush with those dangers, I wouldn't compare it to having actually, been a displaced person or having witnessed exactly what she did. But having come close enough, there's something that some wisdom that gives you. In terms of creating an anxiety, certainly it's a cautionary tale.
And I guess, I was left with this feeling that the saddest part is there is always war to cover.
Absolutely. And war follows war, and war breeds war, too. I think there are so many other ways to go forward. And one of the things that really inspired me about Ahlam was that she understood that education and opportunity are really the solutions. Because she felt like education had given her so much, and that's one of the reasons she fought for the education of others, girls and boys. And that, I think, for the whole region is where we're going to see a future. A military solution, where have we seen that last? It's been a long, long time.
The name of the book is A Disappearance in Damascus, Friendship and Survival in the Shadow of War. The book is published by Picador. Deborah Campbell, a great pleasure having you on the program. Thank you very much for sharing with us this morning.
My pleasure, absolutely.
Great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, A Disappearance in Damascus, Friendship and Survival in the Shadow of War, by Deborah Campbell. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.